Welcome to episode 307 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat digital and innovation with Matt Gardner from the St. Louis Blues.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now here's your host, who's looking forward to being on stage again soon, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and I am looking forward to being on stage again. Actually starting to get some speaking gigs booked. It's good to see the Comedy Festival is coming back to Melbourne with international comedians coming. I don't know if I'll get back on up on a stage doing comedy, but it's great to be able to do it is the main thing. As always, you can contact me the old-fashioned way, email sean@sportsgeekhq.com or reach out to me at Sean Callanan on Twitter and Instagram, or Sean Callanan Speaks on Facebook. We'll talk a little bit about it later, or Sports Geek on most channels. It's been a while. I think the episode break between my chat with Charlie Shin in episode 306 and this episode 307 with Matt Gardner, it's been a bit of a break. To explain the break, and I did so in an email to the Sports Geek News subscribers, but I thought I'd follow up here. Had a bit of a break, a bit of a holiday in Noosa, and really took the decision to really disconnect. It was about 7 or 8 days, and it was really good to do that. Sort of step away from the grind, and I guess I just sort of enjoyed that break. It's probably a good way to put it. Unfortunately, came back to Melbourne to another lockdown, so there's a bit of lockdown fatigue, and then also a heavy project workload. So very grateful and thankful that we've had some work on and some projects. So I just remember got back into the swing of content creation and creating the podcast on a regular basis and booking podcasts. So I'm back, refreshed, and looking forward to pushing the podcast towards 400 episodes. Really pleased to be able to reconnect with Matt. We've been going backwards and forwards over the past few months trying to organise the time. So it was great to connect with him and also jump through some of the technical hurdles we had trying to get all the tech working for the interview. So I hope you enjoy that. Before I jump into that interview, some of the news that is happening is I've put my hand up for the Collingwood Football Club board as a nominee. So I'll discuss that a little bit after the chat with Matt. But otherwise, I'm here to help. I've been doing a few pick my brain sessions. They're a 2-hour session where you can, as the title suggests, pick my brain. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/pickmybrain. They can be deep dive on a single topic. Hey, we want to talk about a specific channel, or we want to talk about a specific campaign. Or they can be just a broad discussion with your team around what they're doing. Part content review, part assessment of what you're doing in the social media space, or what you're trying to do from a digital technology space. So go to sportsgeekhq.com/pickmybrain. And also, shout out to Patreon subscribers. Really do appreciate your support, especially when I haven't been producing some podcasts and having a little bit of a break. sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon if you can, and find the want to be a Patreon subscriber. I really do appreciate it. There's multiple methods and multiple levels there. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon to sign up. Now, I want to get into my chat with Matthew Gardner from the St. Louis Blues. Please enjoy it, and I'll talk to you later. Very happy to welcome Matt Gardner. He is the Vice President of Innovation and Digital Strategy at the St. Louis Blues. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
What people don't know is we've just been wrangling technology just to get this interview started. So appreciate you jumping through the hoops to get everything working. First thing I want to know is how did you get your start in the world of sport?
Yeah, the really cool thing about my story is I started at the age of 16, and I started as a sports writer for a local newspaper. The funny thing that I didn't realize at the time, I saw a classified ad in a newspaper. looking for a freelance sports writer. And what I didn't realize is that they were targeting college students. And here I was, this high school student that walked in to do a written, write on paper, not even a computer thing, write on paper, basically off of a box score and some details and fill out a story. And I got a call later that said you were up against 12 college students and you beat them all out for the job. So I started at 16 covering high school sports, some college, went into University of Kansas in a journalism program. And it just kind of went from there. I thought I was going to be a sports writer my whole career. And this beautiful thing called the digital.
Were there sports writers that you looked up to that you read constantly, whether in your market or nationally, that you looked up to?
Yeah, I love the sports section. And I picked up the Kansas City Star growing up outside of Kansas City almost daily. I looked at USA Today. If I could get my hands on a newspaper and look at the sports section, that was the first thing that I went to. But then, in my latter years in college, this beautiful thing called the digital era started to emerge, and I was just fascinated by it.
Yep.
And so I started to pivot into more of a wanting to work on the team and league side. Had great opportunities starting out with the Kansas City Chiefs, which then morphed into an internship in tennis, and then it just kind of went from there.
So I was looking through your LinkedIn, and you can almost see the evolution of digital just in your job titles. At ATP Tours, it was Advanced Media Manager because people didn't quite know what to call the web. And then at the Orlando Magic, you're Web Services Manager, which, those terms now mean completely different things. But, what was that,
right,
that early digital, merging of journalism, but then, websites and sports sort of, awkward baby giraffe trying to figure itself out in the new web space. What were those early years like at the ATP and then at Orlando Magic?
Yeah, when I joined the ATP in 2000 as an intern, this is pretty incredible to think about. The ATP was updating their website one time a week, and they were on Sunday nights. The tournaments were ending on a Sunday. They were compiling the rankings. They were doing all the results. They were sending all of everything over to a company in Germany from their Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida office. That company was then updating the website so that Monday morning, East Coast time, now the website had been updated. So fast forward a year and a half, I graduate from college. I have an opportunity to go back to the ATP on a full-time position, which I loved because it was a great experience as an intern. And they were basically building this advanced media department to not only do the ATP website, do tournament websites. At the time, we were actually doing player websites as well. Yep. So in a few very, very short years, they went from updating their website one time a week to having point-by-point scoring coming from directly from a chair umpire out to the internet. So very fascinating to see that happen. And then actually when I went on to the Orlando Magic, the Magic were kind of in a different situation, but similar in that they were transitioning and creating a digital department that was coming from their PR staff.
Yep.
So I was one of the very first digital employees for the ATP Tour, and I was one of the very first for the Orlando Magic as well, as both organizations were really shifting into this digital era.
And it was a shift, and I always find it interesting where digital departments are born out of. Like you said there with the Magic, it's out of the PR and comms, and it's like, well, we are sending out a fax to all the news outlets, or now we've got an email list and that's going out. And then it's like, how can we do it internally? And so is that sort of a little bit of how, I guess, the Magic's digital presence sort of started to evolve when you were there?
Yeah, I think that content started to become part of the equation that teams and leagues were really relying on to deliver news. You went from waiting for the news cycle to break what you were doing and appearing in a newspaper the next morning or at the evening news, to now in an instant this can be available on your website and then ultimately onto social media and beyond that. So that really is where I think the whole equation came from. The early days, I don't think teams and leagues were really, really ready for the revenue aspect and the data collection aspect that's become so crucial in what we're now doing. it was more even very early storytelling that had to be the first part to start growing that funnel and investing in digital. And a lot of places didn't have digital budgets to begin with. Like, they didn't really know what to do. And so you've seen this strong evolution over time of growing content, growing storytelling, developing revenue on into data, and now, you know, a lot of emerging trends that are really changing the business.
Yeah, it's very Kevin Costner from a digital point of view. If you build it, they will come. Like, you just keep putting out more great content and more fans come on board. You did make the switch, and a lot of people do that, to go from team side and spending a couple of years in the agency space. How was that from a change of pace, I guess, change of perspective, change of resources? What was it like having a few years in agency land?
Yeah, I was, my early years, you know, my first 7 years between the ATP and the Magic, I was a content guy. That's that was my background, my journalism background. That's what I knew what to do. And I realized that there were a lot of people that were getting into content. There were a lot of people that could do content. There were not as many people that understood the business side of digital media in the sports industry. So I saw it as an opportunity to pivot a little bit. I'd been working with some agencies in Orlando. I was just blown away by the amount of knowledge and what they brought to the table to really be able to change my way of thinking and my approach. And one example is it was working for a restaurant chain, and we were redeveloping their entire presence, digital presence. And my boss at the time, we had a kind of a discovery process going through the realm of understanding this company, what they're trying to accomplish. And he made a list of people that he wanted to interview as part of this process. And he had the restaurant's like host and servers on there. And I'm scratching my head going, we're building a website. Why are you asking to speak to somebody who is serving food? And he wanted to ask the questions of what are people asking you about? Somebody comes in, what are those questions that you're getting about the process, about reservations, about, you know, menus, other things like that? It really changed my way of thinking into being more robust in my overall thought process of how we should tackle a digital or web experience for companies versus the black and white that you're used to. And so when I transitioned into sports and came to the St. Louis Blues, because I really wanted to have more of a business focus, I was now thinking a lot more outside of the box of, it's not just updating a landing page on a website or, you know, promoting a ticket package. It's deeper thinking that we should really be focusing on and making sure we're doing that across the entire organization.
Yep. And so you started at St. Louis, you know, back in 2012, but coming at it with that marketing comms focus as opposed to that pure journalism focus that you started. And you think that was part of the, I guess, the mind shift that agency insight sort of gave you to go, hey, we're not only just telling the story, we're marketing a product behind that, or these stories are going to then give lift to this product down the track. Was that sort of how you were coming at it when you first got to St. Louis?
Yeah, I think it was really trying to tackle things a lot differently in terms of delivering additional value for corporate partners and just not slapping a logo on a page and thinking that it's going to be sufficient. It's asking questions with a lot of partners. You know, what does a sponsor want to get out of the equation in terms of their digital presence? Yep. Are they simply looking for logo representation with the St. Louis Blues brand? Or is there a certain message that they're wanting to get across? Are they a QSR or something that has a very specific product that they're trying to focus? And that just gives you the flexibility of getting back to your sponsorship team with the right type of inventory that the partner is going to feel is valuable to them. And as long as you're able to really demonstrate the analytics that go with it, you're putting yourself in a lot better position versus just having a list of inventory and saying, hey, here are the things that are available. Go out and pitch whatever you want.
So are you, you're in the role there of Senior Director of Promotions and Digital Strategy. Were you sort of straddling the digital department and what the digital team were doing from a content engagement point of view, but then also working really closely with sponsorship and partnership to say, again, like you said, we're not just giving you a shopping list of tick the box of the things you want, but we want to help shape and create and produce that either content or campaign that really fits for the partner. Were you that sort of conduit for the teams?
Yeah, you know, my first few years, it was really developing digital. When yep. I arrived in St. Louis, we only had one other digital employee. We started building a staff. We started focusing a lot more on storytelling, building out what we now have as our Blue Note Productions video unit, established our business intelligence team. So we're starting to focus a little bit more on the analytical side and really begin with storytelling. Storytelling became yep. the first part of the process for us, that we were delivering value. Not only were our analytics going up, the engagement we were getting across our social channels, the numbers we had on our website were consistently starting to grow. But it was then creating inventory above and beyond what we were doing. So constant conversations with corporate partnerships, opportunities to discuss new ways of promoting things with our ticket sales team, focusing really on all of those different channels across the organization and really trying to get the entire organization to have a real solid understanding of how we can leverage digital to make an even stronger impact above and beyond the traditional ways we've been doing things for years in the industry.
Yeah. So in effect, I've seen a lot of teams do that, to sort of have digital as a, almost as an internal agency that's servicing all these different departments, corporate partnership, community, ticketing, season tickets. Was that very much the model you guys were running with at the Blues?
Yeah, and I think the funnel of what we've been able to get a better understanding on over the course of the last few years is technology has changed a lot of conversations. And having kind of centralized departments within the organization, like business intelligence, like our digital team, that hit all aspects of what we're trying to do as a business, have kind of eliminated some of those silos that we've been operating in. So you're not having just a conversation with a ticketing department anymore or a corporate partnership department. Everybody tends to have more of a seat at the table now. And that's really allowed us to grow our business, grow our digital channels, and ultimately lead into kind of this innovation team that we're focused on building now.
Trivial. Well, that does lead me into your current role, VP Innovation and Digital Strategy. You know, innovation is a word that does get thrown around a lot. What does it mean? What does it mean to you? And then what's the remit that you've got at the Blues on, I guess, pushing forward with innovation?
Yeah, I think when we kind of started on this path about 3.5 years ago, we initially called it emerging technology. And yep. not everyone really understood what that meant. They thought it kind of thought, okay, is this just a fancy way of referencing your IT department? And yep. we recognized it was a lot more than that. You know, we're using examples from the past. We're working in the present. Sometimes we're not always thinking about the future, and it's trying to think about things three steps ahead across everything that we're doing. We're in a unique situation right now where we're evaluating a lot of our business systems, ticketing systems and POS systems, and then extensions of that for things that we're going to be doing through our mobile app ways that we can really start to be thinking about not necessarily what we're doing now, but what we're going to need down the road and what's going to give us the most flexibility to be able to deliver the best experience for our fans, capture that extra revenue and data. And so it's a lot of working people together in a room, thinking about things in a different way and coming up with good opportunities where we can continue to grow the organization through innovation and new verticals. I mean, the classic thing about sports is our business used to be pretty simple. We sold tickets, we sold sponsorship, yep. we sold concessions and retail. Now there are all these new incredible avenues with sports betting becoming legalized, NFTs, NILs, gaming. There's just a lot of different ways that we should be thinking about our business beyond those typical verticals that we've lived by for years.
So, I mean, there is a bit of, then you get a bit of, there's so many opportunities. Like, how do you start filtering those opportunities? Like, there's, you know, a lot of great new startups that are offering new ways to engage fans or change the ticketing experience or change their at-home experience. How do you, you know, and again, when you have a title like Innovation and Digital, you must get hit up all the time with, here's the new toy, here's the new tech, this is the next thing. What's your process to sort of filter through what you should be looking at? How do you go through testing or deciding on those, on some of those opportunities?
I recognized real early on, being innovation department employee number one, and the only innovation employee, that there was only so much I could do, and I needed to be able to find opportunities very easily and get a better understanding of what was best for us to act on right away. I've been very fortunate to be aligned with, you know, companies like Stadia Ventures and other programs and, you know, VC-backed opportunities and accelerators that have almost been like an extension of our innovation efforts. You know, they're coming to me having, you know, gone through a vetting process with some of these companies, knowing who is very early stage versus who's ready for prime time and, you know, who perhaps just needs a pilot or a beta test with a team to be able to get off the ground. And we've been introduced to, you know, European companies that wouldn't even been on our radar because they've had success in Europe, but they haven't had a presence in North America yet. And so those types of relationships have allowed us to almost build out an innovation team, even though we're still very small at the moment. But we've had some very successful pilots. We've done some things. We've been first to market for things. Other things, it's been great for us to kind of hold back a little bit more and get a better understanding of how something's going to operate before we introduce it to our fans. And we also have to think about our market in particular, and St. Louis being a very traditional market. Something that perhaps works in you know, San Francisco might not have the same effect in St. Louis. So it's kind of reading the room a little bit, knowing what will have success with your fans versus what maybe is not ready for prime time, and then just making sure you tackle things accordingly.
It's very handy having Stadia Ventures in your own backyard, though. You know, Tim's out there vetting all the latest and greatest, so you do get some good access. It's a good access there. You talk about the St. Louis market. Every team, it's always fascinating, you know, looking from the outside at a team and what they're doing. When one of the things is you don't know is what is the key focus internally for the team. Some are very focused on, you know, cheeks in the seats, filling the stadium, you know, really engaging locally, and others have bigger, broader plans to capture fans outside their market and those kind of things. What's your focus currently for St. Louis? And tell us a little bit about the Blues and the St. Louis market.
Yeah, St. Louis has always been a very traditional market. And we are very fortunate in this city to have, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals, who are just a phenomenal, very important part of this community. And, you know, the Blues, with, you know, 54 years in the NHL and in this market, have also been able to establish a very large fan base, a very fanatic fan base. But we found that there was an opportunity for us to be a little bit more forward thinking and get to market a little quicker, do things a little bit differently. And it's been very advantageous for us. So we were the first in the market to roll out mobile ticketing, full mobile ticketing, I should say. We're really trying to drive a lot of the experiences moving forward as part of the venue experience and watching at home through our mobile app. And I think there's going to be a lot more innovation. We're very excited about St. Louis City SC coming online in 2023 as our new MLS team, and having another team in the market. It's really important for us to make sure that we're providing the right type of experience for our fans. We're using data to get to know our fans very well, and just make sure that wherever they are, you know, coming to a game at home, out of markets, and really trying to grow the success that we've been able to see off of winning the Stanley Cup in 2019, being able to extend that beyond St. Louis nationally and, you know, in a lot of regards globally as well, are important steps that we want to make sure we don't overlook.
So, I mean, is that part of the reason around Blunatics and sort of setting up that as a web presence and connecting with fans in that way?
Yeah. So 2 years ago, we launched Blunatics.
So it's Blunatics, not Blunatics. That's apologies.
You know, the name was an extension off of the rapper Nelly is from St. Louis. And Nelly has his group, the St. Lunatics. So that's okay. where Balloonatics came in. But we realized the name, a lot of people look at it and they think Fanatics. So yep. that's where Balloonatics kind of comes in. We didn't think about that when we named it, but that's kind of the background from it. So we started Balloonatics about 2 years ago, and it was after a period of, you know, maybe 24 to 36 months where we were doing a lot of activations with tremendous partners in the industry and yep. inner wins and games and other things like that. But every time we did those, we were asking our fans the same questions over and over and over again. Give me your name. Give me your email. Give me your phone number. And we're just thinking, this is, you know, we should know this about our fans. It's kind of ridiculous that we keep asking this. So Balloonatics kind of came to be as a single sign-on fan engagement platform where if we have a contest, a sponsor activation, we have game night activations where fans can guess who's going to score the first goal of the game or guess the final score or pick the starting lineup. All of these things that we want to do and then start learning things about our fans, we've started to do in this one platform. And through 2 years and kind of battling through this through a pandemic, we've been able to onboard close to 70,000 fans now yep. through that process, which is, it's been tremendous for us. We send people to the platform for enter to win a jersey or an autograph stick or something. And they end up doing on average 4 activities on the platform. So we will put polls and surveys up there. We will ask a fan, you know, we'll just have a poll up there. What is your favorite jersey that we're going to wear this season? And we'll give them our 5 jersey options. And through that, we are understanding for that fan what is their favorite jersey, which then gives us the opportunity to reach out to them via email with an offer specific to the jersey they said that was their favorite that we were going to wear this year.
So it really does power that personalization that a lot of people talk about, but it's like, how do you get that data to be able to do that personalization? Allows you to do it. And obviously, like, you must look like Nostradamus launching it pre-pandemic and then saying, hey, we've got this platform that can engage fans when we can't get them into a stadium. It would have been pretty useful over the past 18 months.
Yeah, it was. And in fact, we were able to build so much momentum that when we started the 2021 season in January of this year, we averaged 1,000 new registrations on the platform per week, which was great because we're validating a phone number, we're validating an email address, we're asking them, do they want to opt in for email communications, opt in for SMS? So we're giving them the opportunity. We know it's legit data because we've been able to validate it. And we're making sure that we're giving fans the ability to tell us what they want to see and hear, how they want to see and hear from us, which I think is very, very important in this digital age.
And is that helping you shape what the Blues mobile app is and will be?
Absolutely. So we are in early January, we're going to launch a brand new Blues mobile app. Balloonatics is going to be the single sign-on for the app experience. So those fans that have already created an account, there's no additional registration process. They sign on to Balloonatics. Not only that, but now we're able to start tying in ticketing data through Ticketmaster, mobile ordering, mobile wallet usage. The great thing about this data, and I know everybody, you know, gets very, uncomfortable about how data is going to be used, but we want to provide fans the type of marketing experience that is relevant to them. And if we can identify that somebody is a college student, they're probably not interested in a family pack and a family of 4 doesn't want to know about student nights. And so it's just important that at this day and age, we can give fans the type of experience they expect from us because there's so much noise out there. This week, holiday week, you know, here in the US and lots and of Black Friday, Cyber Mondays.
I mean, exactly. I think everyone's inbox is full with, you know, very non-personalized Black Friday, Cyber Monday emails.
Absolutely. It's how do you cut through all that? You know, how do you deliver something that is going to be of value that if it encourages a fan to click on a link or open an email or even, you know, take action in a push notification that they get on their phone?
Yeah. So the other part is sort of looking at some of the latest trends, and you know, when you're looking at digital innovation, you really can't turn anywhere on the internet now without looking at or hearing about the metaverse and NFTs and everything in that space. What's your feeling on them, and you know, where do you see them being applicable in the world of sport?
It's exciting. I mean, this is such an exciting time for what we do. It's intimidating, right? Because you don't really have all the answers. I mean, you know, we're constantly having conversations about cryptocurrency and NFTs, and not everybody really has the answer right away. I mean, there's a lot of teams and leagues that are doing one-off NFTs, but you know, the market hasn't matured yet to really know where things are going to go. You know, people are buying NFTs because they see value in it, or they see it as something that, hey, I need to scoop this up because there's only a limited number. And I'm hearing a lot about NFTs, but that next stage really needs to kind of start to mature a little bit so that a marketplace develops and people now can see, okay, I can get a solid return on this by holding on to it for a little while, and then I put it into a market. And the applications of where this can go in terms of the ticketing experience, perhaps delivering additional value for season ticket holders, and just creating collectibles tied to our brand, our players, our league, the opportunities are endless. And so I know this is one of those areas that everybody's trying to jump in quick. But we're going to be in a spot soon, I think, where things are going to start to develop, and it's all going to make a lot of sense, and it's all going to grow very quickly, and it's exciting. And you know, talk about opportunities with the metaverse, which is a term. It seems like it's getting thrown around daily now with very loose interpretation of what exactly that means. It can mean a lot.
It's got a very wide definition. Some people say metaverse is coming, and then you have the other people say, well, it's already here. Like there's people walking around in Fortnite wearing jerseys of their favorite teams or their favorite brands, and that's how they're represented in that space. So that's part of what the metaverse looks like. For me, I think the utility piece is the bit that I think will be most exciting for sport. So that, like, what does your season ticket look like? Do you get a token because you've been a season ticket holder for X many years? Does that token then interact with your mobile app and connect? And so it becomes this, you know, fan engagement piece and a data piece that people can, rather than having the lanyard or the medallion or the wristband, it'll be, oh, well, this is my token. And you might get rewarded for attending more games or interacting with more activations and content. So I think that's the piece that there's a lot of connecting interoperability that has to be done. But like, that's what Web3 is. It's like this new version of the internet that we're still figuring out.
You know, the biggest piece of negative feedback I think that we've had from fans over the last 3 years has been, as we transition to mobile ticketing away from traditional ticketing, it was not having that physical thing that anymore that you say, I've been collecting these since I was a kid, or I took my son to his very first game. I would love to have that collectible. Now I think NFTs are going to get us to a place where a digital ticket has some value and some meaning to it. I mean, right now with digital ticketing, we treat it no differently than we do a boarding pass on an airline. Like, once you've been on that flight, you remove it from your wallet and you forget about it. This is going to get us to a place where I think we're now making that shift from what a traditional ticket means to somebody after an event to now having that in a digital form.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, over my shoulders, a whole bunch of lanyards from conferences and media passes, like, you know, and there are people that collect, and I was at that game when I saw that goal, or so-and-so scored a hat trick. And so they keep that piece of paper, and it's only sentimental and it only means something to them. So I think there is definitely collectibles in that space, and we're seeing the ticketing companies sort of start to develop that tech. But then I also do think, you know, you'll be able to show your fandom because you'll have all of these, you know, NFT ticket stubs, but then other things that you can do that potentially, because, you know, because of the smart contracts, they can start talking to one another and, oh, congratulations, you've been to 10 games, you've got 10 NFT digital ticket stubs. Oh, by the way, you get the access to one of these NFTs, whether it's driven by the team, whether they pay for it, whether a partner brings it on board. Like, that's where I think it's exciting, and potentially the ability to you to engage a new audience that hasn't been engaged with, you know, the Blues at all.
That's right. And I think finding an opportunity that an NFT delivers value, that's the biggest thing. And that value can be interpreted in a number of different ways, but it's just getting to that point where instead of a one-off right now, which you're seeing in a lot of different places, it's creating that ecosystem that is going to deliver that that long-term value.
Yeah. But I do think, I mean, one thing, we'll still have bobbleheads. We'll still have rally towels, like, but you know, but we also might get some of them in an NFT form, and potentially and allow us to engage the fans that aren't in the stadium. Like, so many of those giveaways are to get people in, but it's like, you know, there's only so many people you can fit in at a Blues game, but there's all these fans watching outside. So how do you engage them on a game by game basis? So I think it is going to be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to finish up with the Sports Geek Closing Five. I'm here chatting with Matt Gardner. He's the VP of Innovation and Digital Strategy. Matt, do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yes, the first I can remember, probably around 1987. It was a Kansas City Royals game. Two years after they won the World Series in 85, I remember I went with my grandparents and one of my brothers. We had a nice photo in front of the World Series trophy that definitely had a lot of extra meaning to it when the Royals won again in 2015.
Terrific. Great ballpark. I was lucky enough to go to the game there when seat was in Kansas City. Enjoyed the game there. You've been to a few sports events over your time. Do you have a favorite food at a sports event, or a go-to food when you end up at a ballpark or a stadium?
You know, I think the only time this comes into play is going to a baseball game, and I got to get a ballpark hot dog. You know, I can't recall going to like an NFL game or NHL or NBA where I've had to focus on one particular food. But if I go to a baseball game, it's got to be a hot dog. I don't know what they do to the things at ballparks, but they're just incredible there.
Yep, exactly. What's the first app you open in the morning?
You know, what's been interesting kind of during the pandemic is I got on this routine of, you know, taking time, make breakfast. Have a very kind of casual, not rushed start to the morning. And I really got into newsletters. And so I open up my Outlook, not incredibly exciting, but I open up Outlook, and as I'm, you know, eating breakfast and stuff, I'm reading some newsletters like Morning Brew, Front Office Sports, a lot of different things like that, just to kind of get the day started before I even dive into social media or anything else. It's just more of a nice, relaxed, laid back start to the day.
Bit of nourishment for the brain. I mean, there is a real growth in those Substack, you know, either once a day or once a week, that just enable you to, you know, pick your media that you want. So is there any, I mean, you named a few there. Are there any other recommendations from a newsletter point of view that that always get you open?
Yeah, I usually look at, Sport Techie, Morning Consult. I look at, I think there's, you know, probably seven or eight. I think they're in my inbox. And sometimes I have more time than others. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's great. It's just kind of a nice way to, you know, kind of get your mind thinking about things instead of starting out looking at, cat memes on your Twitter.
Or the latest argument on the internet, which is sort of what you get when you open up Twitter sometimes.
That's not a great way to start your day, for sure.
Yeah, I do like the fact that Twitter is finally, with its Twitter Blue, has brought back the, I can't remember, again, I keep forgetting the name of it, but the trending articles. So now it's integrated the, I can't remember, the tech that it used to use, which is, here's all the articles that your Twitter followers are tweeting. So it's actually good. If you're following smart people, they normally are tweeting about particular articles, and it's a really nice way to curate. They finally integrated that into Twitter Blue. Whether it's worth the $5, I don't know, but I'm giving it a go. Is there someone that the Sports Geek podcast listeners should follow? Might be a colleague. It might be an author. Might be someone else that you follow and look up to.
Yeah, you know, I would say, and this kind of goes also into the newsletter realm as well. Is I really enjoyed Joe Pompliano, and yep. and his he does a daily newsletter called Huddle Up. He's a fantastic follow on Twitter. I enjoy any time that he puts a tweet out that is part of a thread. You know, it's going to be a fantastic sports business related story, and he yep. does a wonderful job at storytelling. You know, a lot of things that there's probably topics on there that you've heard just a little bit about, but he yep. dives in and gives you a lot of great details. And oftentimes that then transitions into his newsletter. Always fantastic. I always enjoy seeing his stuff and his perspective. So Joe Pompliano, I definitely recommend everyone giving him a follow.
He's done a terrific job using those threads as a rabbit hole to draw people in. Because they are deep dive. And again, if I'm not plugging Twitter Blue, but the thread reader is actually quite good because it brings them all in. But again, we've gone full circle. Like again, 10, 12 years ago, everyone would write a blog and you would go read a blog. And now no one leaves Twitter. Like they don't click a lot of links. So people have transformed the way they've done it into threads. Lastly, what social media platform is your MVP? And so I'll give you two choices. You can answer it as the St. Louis Blues, what platform's working well for you, but then also personally, what's your social media platform MVP?
Yeah, personally, my go-tos are Twitter and LinkedIn. Those yep. are the two that I use enough. Professionally, I am fascinated by TikTok. I think what you're seeing on TikTok is something that we have to really look at very strongly in terms of habits that are going to be formed by Gen Z, yep. which are going to impact viewership on games, attendance at games. There are a lot of business practices that I think that we need to be very mindful of how Gen Z is focusing on their content creation, but also their content consumption, you know. And I think a lot of brands learned lessons from Snapchat. When Snapchat kind of took off, every brand had to be on Snapchat. And what Snapchat users told us was they don't want brand content on Snapchat. They want to have those experiences with your friends. And now you're starting to see the extensions of that on TikTok and how creators are having so much more of an impact than brand accounts. And so there are a lot of different unique things that we should be looking at and not just thinking about Gen Z being this or TikTok being this thing that only Gen Z uses, but there's a lot of practical things that are going to shape the future based on what we're seeing on that platform today.
So it's a really good point. And so how are you like tackling TikTok strategically? Cause it's such a different platform to the timeline based algorithm pushing, that fits to a certain degree with sports of there's a game on, here's the highlights from the game, here's what happened at the game. Whereas TikTok, it's like the internet casino. There's no clocks. You don't know when it happened. You could post something posted 3 weeks ago could pop up in someone's feed. So how do you tackle it, you know, as a team? Because you know, Blues are a brand, but have you tackled it from the Blues point of view?
You know, we have to look at it completely different than how we've operated any social platform before. You know, you can take your typical structure of what you're doing on social media, and maybe your delivery is a little bit different between Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Yep.
TikTok, you're throwing all of that out the window, and you're thinking about it from an entertainment standpoint. But you always have to be mindful as you're trying to create an innovative, creative account that you also want to grow an audience that starts to love hockey. You want to yep. take a community on TikTok and make them St. Louis Blues fans. So you can't overlook not inserting the hockey narrative into the equation at a certain point. So it's a very fine-tuned balance, whereas the other platforms are totally a hockey brand play. This yep. one, you're trying to sort of, you've got to get in with the trends. You got to understand how the trends work, what trends will work with your brand and not force something. But then how do you make sure that you're bringing hockey into the equation so that somebody who sees your stuff starts following your stuff because you're entertaining, all of a sudden they start to become a hockey fan. And that's the big piece that you got to make sure you don't overlook.
Yeah. But that is very much a fan growth strategy, talking to new fans. How do we acquire new fans? As opposed to traditional platforms, which is let's talk to our fans. We know they're on these platforms. Let's give them what they want. It's a very, and that's the mind shift that for, your content creator or the person that's got the phone that's running the TikTok account, they have to remember, oh, hang on, I'm in TikTok mode. I've got, entertainment first, talking to new fans. There's an ability, and it's really hard to get a new fan. There's actually an ability to acquire a new fan via TikTok. Like you said, if they're like, oh, the Blues are doing cool shit on TikTok, that's why I want to follow them. And if that fan then comes across to other platforms, that's the bonus. But I really do like the strategy because it's so, the platform is so different to all the others. Of course, there's some Lewis fans on TikTok, but it won't it won't translate if you're just doing, hockey first content.
Yeah, and I think that TikTok presents a very different opportunity than other platforms that we've used. I mean, we're extending off of a hockey audience, I think, on those other platforms. If we can get somebody who starts following the Blues because they're from St. Louis, or they're just really like the way that we're doing things unique to other brands, other people that they follow, and it gets them to come to a St. Louis Blues hockey game because of that, that's tremendous. That's really what we're looking for. It's kind of, that slow drip of building up a fan. And we know it's a younger demographic that's using TikTok. If we can start building that relationship with somebody that's on the platform 13, 14 years old, that by the time they have income, they want to buy tickets, and we start to build that hopefully lifelong relationship, regardless if that fan's in our market or out of our market.
Terrific, Matt. I really do appreciate you jumping through the technology hoops we had to do to get this interview started. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you on the internet and say hello, thank you for the podcast?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Matt_Gardner. Love to please reach out, give me a follow, send me a message. Would love to connect. And you'll also find me on LinkedIn.
Matthew Gardner on LinkedIn. I will share those links in the show notes. Thank you very much for, like I said, jumping through technology hoops, but also coming on and having a chat. Really do appreciate it. Hope to be in your part of the world sometime soonish once they allow Australians to travel again. Really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for having me, and look forward to connecting in person one of these days.
Learn from the Sports Geek Amplify Season 1 cohort. Timo, Vlast, Stellar Algo, Ubi Park, and Zoom. For more, go to sportsgeekamplify.com.
Thanks again to Matt Gardner. You can connect with him on Twitter, Matt_Gardner, G-A-D-N-E-R, or look up Matt Gardner on LinkedIn. He is very much available. And please send him a tweet or send him a message to tell him that you listened to the podcast. And on that note, on LinkedIn, one of the things I have offered and continue to offer is advice for people looking to develop their career at, a lot of people having some serious thoughts about what they want to do in their career, whether they want to stay in sports biz or whether they want to get into sports biz. I was lucky enough to go to a sports networking event recently. The guys at SportsGrad do a great job, and it was terrific to be back at a networking event. So I'm offering office hours. If you go to sportsgeekhq.com/office hours, pretty much built for, one-on-one, hey, what should I be doing? How should I get to where I want to go? I will offer my best advice that I can there. Digital to dollars. One of the reasons you haven't listened to the podcast recently is because I've been doing a lot of work in the digital to dollar space. The good thing is, if there is a positive coming out of all of these lockdowns, is that I can run the digital dollars process completely remotely. It's completely COVID safe. Ran it completely with the guys at Greyhound Racing Victoria. I think we did 10 workshops in all over using Butter, which is a video conferencing platform that I really, really do like. Check it out, butter.us. Yeah, and so we can run through the Digital Dollars workshops, you know, and really focus on what your objective is for digital. Is it fan growth? Is it engagement? Is it delivery for sponsors? Is it increasing revenue? And so from a Digital Dollars process point of view, how it works, the five pillars: know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, know your value, how you're going to price it to the market, and then know your pitch, how you're going to bundle up all of those assets plus your other assets to potential to a sponsor. So Digital Dollars works, whether it's for a league, it can be applied for a team. It has been adapted and can work for a stadium. How do you talk to your customers? Also, it does work for an athlete, coach, or a personality and do it around a single entity brand. And it also works for a business. If you're not, you know, not from a sports point of view, you can take the first three pillars, know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, and it pretty much gives you the foundation for a digital strategy. So please get in touch if it's something that you're interested in. If you want to straighten up revitalize what you're doing in the digital space, you can check out the process, digitaldollars.com. You can check out the Digital Dollars series, where I discuss the five pillars in this podcast feed. If you scroll up on your podcast app, or simply just give me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Well, I did tease it before my chat with Matt Gardner. I have put my hand up for the Collingwood Football Club board. For those of you who are international, who don't know who the Collingwood Football Club is, it is one of the biggest teams in the Australian Football League, over 125 years old, one of the storied, and I don't say franchises because we call them clubs here. I've been a long time follower. My great grandfather played for Collingwood way back in 1911. So I've been a Collingwood fan since birth and been a Collingwood member for 18 years. And so right now, Collingwood is has four board seats that are up for nomination. So they call for nominations, and it's something that's always been in the back of my mind. How can I provide my expertise and experience that I've learned both in my IT career, but more specifically in the last 12 years as a sports geek from a digital point of view? And so when they asked for nominations, I had a few friends tap me on the shoulder, so I put in my nomination to put my hand up. So the election process is currently underway. When you listen to this, there'll probably be 4 or 5 days left in the voting cycle as people are allowed to vote online. And so it's been an interesting process so far. What skills do I bring? Well, I think digital is the key to connecting fans. It is exactly the reason why I started Sports Geek. Our initial slogan was connecting fans, sports, and sponsors using technology. That was our initial byline when we went when I started Sports Geek. And what COVID has shown us is that fans want to stay involved even if they're not in the stadium. So it is that case of sports for a long time has focused on the fans inside the stadium and probably to the neglect of some of the fans outside the stadium. So I think there's a real opportunity for all sports really post-COVID is to continue that engagement with fans outside the stadium. And so I think the other thing that I do provide to the board is sports technology. I think it's the next real edge that teams can have. Been lucky enough to talk to some people in the sports technology space working on team side that are doing some terrific things that I can't talk about on the podcast because they are effectively creating an edge for their team and they don't want their other competitors to know. And so that's the kind of sports tech I can bring into the club and potentially give the Pies an advantage where they can get one. What I have been doing is spending a lot of time talking to members. I was one of only two nominees to put both my phone number and email on my bio when it was sent out to members. So I've taken some phone calls, some emails, answered a lot of queries on social media. The big themes are the members want improved member connection. They're saying things like, I feel like a number, I don't feel wanted. which is not what you want from your membership base. I think there's a real, you know, for mine, members are the lifeblood for the AFL industry overall, and definitely Collingwood. Collingwood's got 82,000 members. And again, that distinction between the Australian market and the US markets, you know, they're not called season ticket holders. But again, listening to a lot of Collingwood members, they're not feeling like a member. So what I would like to do is to focus on, one, bringing them back to the club and focus actually on deeper engagement with that 82,000, and maybe even at the expense of the attention of growth. Like, how can we make sure that the members who are on board now are happy, engaged? To me, that's more important than growth at this moment, because there's, you know, there's fans that haven't been to a game in two years or haven't sat in their seat in 2 years, and that means a lot to them. So I think that's really important. And I think the other thing that's important, especially when we're looking at the demographic of the Collingwood fan base, we really need to focus on the next generation of Pies members. And again, it's not a Collingwood thing. I think it's an industry thing. How do we connect with Gen Z and below? Because they have different consumption habits. They're not consuming sports in the same manner. And they want different experiences. They don't want the same experiences that potentially people of my generation or older want. So I think that's really important. How do we best connect and convert those fans? You know, I've used the digital escalator in slides and presentations around the world of a means to deepen ties with fans to eventually get them to the top of that escalator to say, here you go, in this case, Collingwood, here's my credit card. That's okay. You guys keep it. I'm in. And so that's always a work in progress. And so for mine, that's where I think there's a real opportunity. And I guess what I have been doing over the past 12 years is helping convince CEOs and boards on why digital works. And the ones that do buy in and give the green light have a lot of success in the digital space, and then all the ancillary benefits that come of it, better data, increased ticket sales, increased digital audiences, increased TV ratings, increased attendance. All of these are side effects of a really good digital strategy and a really good digital execution. So I think I think my voice and on the board can help drive that and help give the Collingwood digital membership ticketing commercial team some real good runway around what they want to do, activating the fan base from a digital point of view. So there've been some of the discussions. I'll probably do a little bit of a breakdown how I went about it, what the campaign was like, some of the learnings. I'm mid-campaign, so I'm a little bit cautious to say what did I get right, what did I get wrong. So I guess the last thing is how can you help? I mean, if you're an eligible voting member for Collingwood, I'd really appreciate your vote. The vote ends on December 10. I'm constantly chatting with members and fans on my Facebook page. You can go to that. Sean Callanan Speaks is where you can find that. If you see one of those posts, give it a like, even if you're not a Collingwood fan. I'd really appreciate it. It's the old signal boost. It helps more people see it. And obviously, if you know a Collingwood supporter or a member, please send them my way. Happy to chat to them. Having a lot of varied conversations. And that's good. And because really what I want to do is be a representative of the members on the board and give them a voice. Some of the things I won't be able to solve, but I will at least, one, make them feel heard and help them understand why certain things have happened. And I think that's where a lot of the opportunities are in having a stronger communication with the members. You can go to seancallanan.com for more info. Check it out. Like I said, I've got more podcasts coming this month, so hopefully I can give you some good news once the results come back. But do appreciate the support that I have had via LinkedIn and Twitter and social so far. I really do appreciate it, the people that have supported it so far. So that's it for this episode. Like I said earlier, if there's a way I can help, whether it's with a two-hour Pick My Brain session, sportsgeekhq.com/pickmybrain, please go back, listen to the Sports Geek Amplify series, sportsgeekamplify.com. find out more about some terrific sports technical solutions. Teemo, Stellar Argo, Zoomf, Ubipark, Vlast, all doing great stuff. So really do appreciate it. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. Have you listened to the Sports Geek Amplify series? Go to sportsgeekamplify.com to listen.